Welcome to Tori Mecha Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Rachel Besser, and today we will be studying Ezra Perek Gimel, Chapter 3. So far in Sefer Ezra, we have embarked on an adventure with the remnants of the exiled Jewish community of Babylonia, now Persia, returning to their homelands. The journey is exciting, not only because it represents a dream of coming home and building the Beit HaMikdash, but also because of the unique challenges presented at this time period, where outright divine miracles and prophecy are waning, and the birth of a new rabbinic system has not yet taken hold. Chapter 3 is the first one where we see this new community establishing a presence in Eretz Yisrael. With great excitement, they come together in the month of Tishrei in order to celebrate Sukkot together. Even though there is no Beit HaMikdash yet, Sukkot is one of the holidays where Jews all go to Jerusalem, so it is a perfect time to begin to establish their new community. We see in verse 1, Vayesfu ha'am ki'ish achad el Yerushalayim. The nation gathers as one person to Jerusalem. We see their unity, their sense of purpose. Besides being a holiday where we sit in huts outdoors, Sukkot is also the holiday of Korbanot, of sacrifices, where different sacrifices are offered each day. Zerubbabel and Yoshua, the new leaders, build a mizbeach in place of where it used to stand and begin offering korbanot on behalf of the congregation. It is an exciting time, although beneath the merriment, there is anxiety. In verse 3 we read, Ve'achinu ha-mizbeach al-mechonotav. They prepared the mizbeach on its place where it used to be, ki ba'ayma aleihem me'amei ha'aratzot, because of fear from the other nations. Vayalu olot l'Hashem olot l'boker v'la'arev. And they brought korbanot, they brought sacrifices in the morning and in the evening. The giving of the korbanot comes not only because of the people's celebration of Sukkot, but also because they realize that they are a tiny group of people, weak and unarmed, in a new land, where the neighbors might not be so excited for this new group of people to begin to claim their ancestral homeland. Sound familiar? How would giving korbanot allay their fears? Ibn Ezra explains that this was their way of praying to Hashem to protect them, while Rashi comments that building the Beit HaMikdash is going to take a long time, and the people, the community, wanted to show the surrounding nations immediately that they are serving Hashem in Jerusalem just as Cyrus told them to, invoking Cyrus's protection and the mission that he gave them. It's interesting to note how their ritual was not only a spiritual move, but at least according to Rashi, and even Ibn Ezra, has some political overtones as well. And that's normal because you can't now, while creating this new community, you can't divorce the religious and the political. They're creating this religious life, but they're living in a political reality and one that they need to contend with and deal with. While the people are in Jerusalem and celebrating Sukkot and giving korbanot, they also begin to organize themselves to start to build the Beit HaMikdash, which is going to be quite a large building project. Towards that aim, in verse 7, we read, Vayitnu kesef l'chotzvim v'lacharashim, u'ma'achal u'mishteh, v'shemen latzidonim v'letzorim, l'avi atzei arazim min ha'levanon el yam yafo, k'rishayon korish melch paras aleihem. They paid the craftsmen and the people that were going to cut down the trees. They gave them money, and we're talking here about the people from Sidon and Sor, the countries to their north, and they gave them food and drink and oil, and they were tasked with the job of bringing the cedars of Lebanon down through the sea to the port of Yafo, and then they would take them by land to Jerusalem. And the pasuk ends up, and this is according to the authorization granted to them by King Cyrus of Persia. And again, you see the combination of religious and political, because it's not enough to have this religious and spiritual event of getting prepared for the Beit HaMikdash, but they're living in a political reality where they have to now contact other countries, they have to have some type of foreign relationships, and there's going to be they are going to have to pass through other people's land. And it's important that they note that this is with Cyrus's permission. With preparations in place, the congregation goes home to work on their farms and wait out the winter. They gather again for the dedication ceremony 7 months later in the month of Iyar, the same month that Shlomo HaMelech dedicated the first Beit HaMikdash. King Solomon had his dedication ceremony also in the second month in Iyar. No building has started yet, but they are getting ready to break ground on the foundation. The Mizbeach is, of course, already there since they had built it back in Tishrei. The celebration begins with appointing Kohanim and Leviim to be in charge of the work. Afterwards, as the builders begin to lay down the foundation, Vayamidu haKohanim milubashim b'chatzotrot, v'Leviim b'nei Asaf b'maltzaltayin l'halel et Hashem al yedei David melech Yisrael. They're starting to get involved in the preparations, but this here now is a celebration. This is not just breaking ground. This is a festival. And therefore, the Kohanim come out with their traditional clothing, and they come out with their trumpets, and they start to blow. And the Leviim come out with their instruments, and they start to play instruments, and they also start to sing. They sing the traditional songs, the Tehillim, that they sang in the first Beit HaMikdash, written by King David. And now we have this amazing traditional festival happening, and the singing and the joy builds up in verse 11. Ve'anu b'halel u'b'hodo l'Hashem ki tov, ki li'olam chasto. And they now sing in accordance with the congregation. They're answered with halel, with praise and thankfulness to Hashem. And they say, Hodu l'Hashem ki tov, thank you to Hashem, ki li'olam chasto, for his goodness is ongoing. And they're thankful al Yisrael for what Hashem has done for Bnei Yisrael. B'chol ha'am he'riu tru'a gedola. They, all the nation, trumpets this great sound. Not just the trumpets, but also their voices are shouting. B'halel Hashem, praise Hashem, al husad beit Hashem. This wonderful event of setting up the foundation of the Beit HaMikdash. It couldn't be any more wonderful. But then something happens. Something that breaks up the joy. People begin to cry. And in verse 12 we read, V'rabin me'akohanim v'leviim v'roshei ha'avot hazkenim. Many of the priests and the Levites, the ones who are playing the instruments, v'roshei ha'avot, and the heads of the household, the hazkenim, the ones who were old, the venerated older people, the leaders, asher ra'u et habayit harishon b'yasto, those that were the link to the earlier generations who had actually seen the first temple. So we're talking about people who are probably in their 60s and their 70s and their 80s, who probably the journey was hard on them, and here they are building the new temple. Zeh habayit ve'inehem. And they take a look at this new Beit HaMikdash. Again, there is no Beit HaMikdash, but they're thinking about the future, what it's going to be like. And they start to cry. Bochim bekol gadol. They don't just cry, they wail in a great voice. The rabbim, but other people, many other people, betrua b'simcha l'harim kol. They're shouting and happy, and they're raising their voice in song. And now you have this people, the older venerated people are crying and crying, and they won't stop. The realization hits them. Is this all there is? Just some ragtag bunch of people, poor, desperate. This is the Beit HaMikdash that we're building. Their cries get louder. This Beit HaMikdash is nothing like the old one. The life that we're living is nothing like the time of Shlomo HaMelech or even King Yoshio. There's no sovereignty. There's no Jewish king. And honestly, how can you have a Beit HaMikdash when it's missing the Aron? But the old, other people, the younger ones, who never saw the Beit HaMikdash and they never experienced it, they don't even realize. And they continue screaming and laughing in joy. And the two sounds merge and blend until they become one cacophonous noise. As the Pasuk says in verse 13, Ve'ein ha'am makirim kol tshurat ha'simcha, l'kol b'chi ha'am, you couldn't even parse out who was laughing and who was crying, ki ha'am mar'im tshu'a gadola, because now it's just a huge sound, v'ha'kol nishma ad l'merchak. And the sound was so loud that it could be heard very far, and that's the end of the perek. This perek is what we would call a literary envelope. Something that starts in one way and ends in another way. Because it starts, Vayasfu ha'am ki'ish achad el Yerushalayim. There is a unity of the voices. There is a unity of the people, a unity of purpose, but it ends with a unity of voices, of voices that emerge together and can't be separated. But the end is not actual unity, but rather the merging of the voices is a sign of fracturing. What went wrong? How did we get from the beginnings of such great hopes, peace and togetherness, to bitter tears and breaking apart of a people at a time when they're dedicated a new Beit HaMikdash? The answer is in the details. Imagine you're going into business with a friend and you want to start a cookie company. So it sounds wonderful. Everyone loves cookies. We're gonna make this great recipe and we're gonna sell a lot of cookies and it's gonna be great. We're gonna have fun and we'll be rich. But then you start and you realize, wait a second, we have very different visions for how this company's going to run. You want to start big, I want to start small. You want to have sprinkles, I want to have chocolate chips, whatever it is. We didn't really discuss that when we had our grand plans and we were talking about how amazing our company is going to be. Now, that's what's going on here with the Beit HaMikdash. The leaders, perhaps unwillingly, and of course hindsight is 20/20, perpetuated this problem by building a Mizbeach without having a Beit HaMikdash there first. The Korbanot gave everyone this high that comes with the ritual without the work that comes with building the Beit HaMikdash. Now, I'm not trying to say that the leaders did the wrong thing. There were very good reasons to build the Beit HaMikdash, to build the Mizbeach. But people want to build on that Mizbeach. Everyone agreed about that. But we didn't talk about and we didn't really parse out what this Beit HaMikdash was going to look like. What was the process going to look like? Additionally, buying those cedar trees from Lebanon perhaps set up a false expectation of what the Beit HaMikdash was actually going to be. Shlomo HaMelech was the one who also bought cedar trees from Lebanon. Cedar trees are very expensive. And they're not necessarily something that is necessary for a Beit HaMikdash. Of course, they're wonderful if you can afford it, but can this community afford it? So they were almost lulled into this sense of when we build the Beit HaMikdash, we will be able to fall back onto our past. We'll be able to recreate Bayit Rishon, when actually they're in a very different situation than Bayit Rishon. Even scheduling the dedication ceremony for the same month that the first Beit HaMikdash was dedicated in perpetuated that false idea of what the Jews are supposed to do now was replicate the old Beit HaMikdash. Not just the building itself, but the whole life that came with it, the whole economic life, and the divine presence and the spiritual life. And no one confronted head on the reality that this Beit HaMikdash was going to be very different, not only was because it was going to have be much smaller and maybe shabbier. They didn't have the same type of economy or sovereignty that Shlomo HaMelech did. And not only because it was done under the jurisdiction of a governor when Israel was not even an independent country, and not only because 10 of the tribes were missing, but most of all because their spiritual circumstances had changed. This Beit HaMikdash did not have Hashem's divine presence in the same way. That doesn't mean that the first one was a good Beit HaMikdash, and this is a bad Beit HaMikdash. On the contrary, there are a lot of mistakes made during the time of Bayit Rishon that can be completely redone here. The society during the first temple was completely corrupt, as we learned in Sefer Yirmiyahu. This society looks like it could be much kinder and more unified, perhaps. Maybe this is a society that could take care of their weaker links, of their widows and orphans. That society had a beautiful Beit HaMikdash, but they used it in the wrong way. This society has potential to build a Beit HaMikdash that they can use just in the right way. They need to realize that they have a role to play in their own future and not try to recreate their past. This parak ends on a note of uncertainty. Will the community come together and recapture the spirit of giving that they had in Perek Bet when they all joined together and gave korbanot to the Beit HaMikdash, even from all their different walks of life? Or will this dedication ceremony only expose the cracks in their society without a way to mend it? We are left uncertain, and we will have to see how the society navigates their new life. Thank you for studying together. Le'ilo Nishmat, Malka Esther, Bat Zvi Yosef.